edition, The Leftovers, Take Two Show. I've got Tony with me. Tony, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
And we've got Roy with us. Roy, what's going on?
How are y'all doing tonight?
Doing well. This is going to be a weekly show for everybody. We, the three of us, follow very closely the HBO TV show The Leftovers. Season 3, its final season, has just begun this past Sunday night. And we, of course, had to watch the opening episode. It was mind-blowing, as they usually are, but I think this time around was pretty wild. What did you guys think overall?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely interesting. I love where they're headed with it, I think. That's my big takeaway, is you've melded together the first and second season casts in a way that we're really going to get some kind of resolution, I hope, out of this. So I'm looking forward to it.
I agree with Tony. I'm liking the way that they're taking the show. I think they set up a great season, even though it's a short season with 8 episodes. But I think they're going to put a lot into them and come away with yet another hit for HBO.
Yeah, so the show is based off of Tom Perata's book. And season 1 ended where the book ended. So season 2 last season, they just kind of, HBO's writers did their own thing. And then they got the blessing. Tom Perata's been involved the entire time for the most part with Damon Lindelof creating the show. And
it's definitely got that Lost vibe too, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You can definitely tell his style of show. And that's part of why I really enjoy it. I'm a big Lost fan. So
this season, I mean, since I enjoy the show, it's always bummed when you hear there's going to be less episodes. But after seeing this first episode, I think they're just going to throw haymakers at us each week and have it all, you know, since there's only going to be 8 episodes. You know, this one was packed. There's so much stuff packed into this one opening episode. I think it's going to be fun each and every week, and I'm glad we're going to follow it.
Yeah, I think with a short season, you can't really waste time on what we call filler episodes. You're going to have to get into the meat of the story and really give the audience something every week in order to make most of your time.
I love that they kind of bookended the episode with just like, what the hell's going on kind of moments. Like, they opened the second season the same way with like a totally out there sequence, you don't know what's going on. But then they also ended this episode with one of those kind of scenes where it's foreshadowing maybe where we're going to end up with the season. So
the show, most known for people just saying, wait, what? Timeout, you know, rewind, and then you go watch it again, and I still, what does that mean? I still don't know what that means. So let's kind of break it down a little bit. This episode opens up with pilgrims, if you will, building a colony. It was 1844, and they're all gathered around, and they start climbing on top of their houses and wearing all white, which is very reminiscent of this show, since there's a group that wears all white, so that could have been a foreshadowing in a way. And birds, pigeons, was it pigeons the guy kept pulling out?
Yeah, I think so. Carrier pigeons, probably.
Yeah, and a gentleman pulls one out and pulls out a little message written on it and then goes and writes on a blackboard a date. And then on that date, everyone climbs to the top of their home and waits, which I'm guessing to be taken, right?
I think it was supposed to be kind of showing an earlier version of the departure, in this religious sect. Right. I looked it up. They were actually a real thing called the Millerites, and this actually happened.
Oh, wow.
In 1844. So they did base that in fact, yeah. So,
okay.
And that song, too, the song that plays, I don't know if you guys paid attention. I thought the song was made for the show because the lyrics were very, like, on key with what goes on the show.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, but it was a 1970s Christian rock band called Good News Circle.
No kidding.
And the song was called I Wish We'd All Been Ready. And that, you know, really goes along with the theme of the show and what happened, and, you know.
Yeah.
You can always count on Tony to pick up on the musical part of the shows. I remember he picked up on the Westworld stuff. So,
definitely. And there were a good 3 songs in the show that were outside the score, you know, that were definitely somewhat memorable and in there for a reason. So.
Yeah. So then we get to, for the most part, the end of the world doesn't happen. And it seems like a lot of the people in this colony are losing faith, except for one woman who sticks around. She goes up. She's the only one that climbs up. a torrential downpour comes, soaks her. She comes down. She looks up. She's losing her family. And then she goes into a random kind of house nearby and then lays down next to a bunch of other people in all white and dies? Or we don't know.
I don't know. That's where they roll over to the
segue to the modern day,
yeah,
right?
Present day. Yeah. Well, no, not present day.
Oh, yeah, 3 years ago, I guess, right. Technically.
Yeah.
And you see your guilty remnant people where we left off at the end of the second season. You see Evie and Meg, and then the impending drone strike comes and levels Miracle and destroys at least we think destroys the guilty remnant. So.
Correct. Then we get to present
day. How wild was that to see that come about, though? I mean, I don't think I would have thought that you would have seen that kind of a retaliation or something right there within the show. I thought that was pretty wild that they brought that in.
It kind of reminded me of like Waco, you know?
Yeah.
The government goes in and just sets the place ablaze when these people don't cooperate, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And no coincidence that the Waco siege actually happened this week. That's April, I think it was like April 10th, April 20th, this range, you know, so the comparison needs to be made there, I think.
And that's Texas out. Too, right? It all occurred in Texas, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. There's a lot of correlation there, then, I guess.
So, sadly, no more Liv Tyler for any Liv Tyler fans, because she was inside that little bunker that the drone hit perfectly. And we are to assume that she and the rest of the GR are out.
Yeah, that was, like, the lowest flying drone ever. You're not supposed to see the drones before they hit you.
Right.
It was more like, you know, my kid's drone he got for Christmas, and then it launched a missile. I was like, what?
Yeah, the slow-mo seeing of it coming at you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
but
now...
Yeah, and then, like I said, we jumped ahead 3 years,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
We see Kevin kind of back in his old ways again. He's the chief, of course, now in Jardin, Texas, which is really Miracle.
Yeah.
And he's the chief again, and riding on his white horse around, which, again, I'm going to give you these allegories all season. Another thing I read online is that this is a comparison to the Book of Revelation, the man riding the white horse, and he's talking about the pilgrims coming into the city. So there's definitely stuff like this that they work in there for a reason and lay on these religious themes and reasoning behind everything, you know.
Write these down, folks. Write each one of these down that Tony gives you.
you could just compare it. It's the third season, so, and they're finishing with three seasons, and three is a holy number as well. So, I mean, it all kind of fits together with that as well.
This is true. I think as we go on, and as this episode went on, it got very religious and very, you know, a lot of those things very much, not that the show hasn't been that, but I felt this one more so than ever, obviously. So now it felt like, you know, there was no more people outside of Miracle or outside the gates because there was a giant crater there. So it felt like they kind of brought those folks inside, you know, the little hippie section that was in the tents.
Yeah. Well, they got rid of the little screening system because that got blown up.
Right, right.
And now we're, what, 2 weeks away from what would be the 7-year anniversary of the departure.
Correct. And there's flyers on the ground that say 14 days to go.
Or Armageddon, according to them.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
So then we get to Matt. He is a reverend or a pastor at this point. And, I mean, he's in charge. He's running the show. He's on the loudspeaker. People are listening to him. He's back in his element. And he's, you know, back. Nothing's changed, I guess, in him now because he's talking about October 14th again. And he's talking about 14 days to go. And it turns out he was the one that was passing out the flyers, we find out later. But he's got some validity to his words because Mary, his wife, who's in the coma, now she's fully out of it. Walking around like nothing happened. Their baby has been born and is now 3 years old and healthy, you know, grown boy. So when
Noah,
he,
by the way.
Noah is the baby's name?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay, I missed that. All right.
And of course, that's for a good reason, I'm sure.
Is Noah a famous name in the Bible or something?
I think so. It was something with like some rain or something, right?
Oh, great. Does that?
Oh, I thought he was the one with the animals. Maybe.
So we're either going to get two of every animal or a flood later on this season.
Well, and again, he talked about when he was preaching, he talked some numbers. Again, Damon Lindelof loves his numbers if you watch Lost. That was a big part of Lost. So he was talking again about Seven and how it's been 7 years since the departure and that whole bit. And there's all these different iterations of Seven being an important thing in the Bible. So,
yeah.
They are playing up these religious, themes throughout, and really you're expecting to see this end of the world type situation come about. So,
you know, Tony, I'm going to have to get on my game because you're really picking up on a lot of stuff that just seemed to shoot by me. So next episode, I'm going to have to get prepared.
Well, like me and Brian said, now we're taking notes. You know, it's a different way of watching TV than maybe you used to. So now you're catching more and you're paying attention more.
I'm like extra into it. I mean, this show, I think people should take notes anyway. Just to try and just say. And I think you watch Lost. I never did, but you needed to take notes during Lost half the time, too.
I like to say the more you watched, the more you got lost anyway. Because, I mean, you would watch an episode and then the next episode would completely change something. And then two episodes down the road, it would all of a sudden circle back and put it all together. And you're like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And that's the beauty of it. And I think that's what Lindelof is bringing to this as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the final episode would be Kevin just waking up from a dream. And then it all wraps up. All right, so back to now we've got, Kevin, he's the chief and he's in charge, and now he's kind of at roll call and he's going through with all the officers, and they have a pretty decent sized police force, I noticed, for their small town, by the way. And they said...
Well, yes and no, because he needed to recruit those deputies.
The two random hippies.
That was the best part of the episode, the funniest part at least.
Yeah, get into that.
Yeah, that there's two random hippies just in the town square with a humongous blow-up Gary Busey. And, they're brought out there, and Kevin's brought on to tell him to take it down, but they're like, no, Gary Busey's coming back on October 14th.
So, back from heaven.
But he's like, well, why don't you guys become my deputies instead of taking down your blow-up doll? You can become my deputies. So,
so with him, though, is his son. Tommy has become a cop, and he's in full uniform the whole episode. And then they're chatting about the pilgrimage, and they're expecting 5,000 to 10,000 visitors that are going to be coming, and they're understaffed. So he's in full cop mode, and then he gets a little visit from Dean, an old friend from New York.
Yes, his old hunting buddy, if I'm not mistaken.
Hunt dogs.
And he's the one that took him out to the woods in season one when they first killed Patty in real life. So he comes in and he pulls out of a cooler a half-eaten, one bite taken out of peanut butter sandwich, wrapped in plastic. He's got gloves on. He's treating this thing like it's a hot nuke. And Kevin, of course, is a little creeped out what's going on. And then Dean pretty much tells him that high-ranking officials in the government are dogs that are taking the shape of humans, or vice versa, right? And so at this point, Kevin kicks him out because he thinks he's a kook and wants to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm. But Kevin used to think things like this just, when he was in Mapleton. So
yeah,
that's why he comes to him with this, level of confidence. But that may have turned Dean sour on him.
Yeah, yep. Then we get home, and Kevin gets home, and he walks in, and there's John with a beard. By the way, everyone has a beard, it feels like, or at least all the grown men decided to grow beards over the last 3 years. But there's John. Well, go ahead.
Well, it is a thing to do for the biblical times, too. I mean, everyone's supposed to have a beard, right?
That's true. They didn't have Dollar Shave Club back then, so.
They did.
Yeah. I think Matt even references it later in the episode.
Yes. Yep.
So
we'll get there. So there's John. He's sitting inside his house, and he's sitting across from a man who's very skeptical about what John's about to do, and the guy gives him his handprint. And then now John's revealing that he's going to not read his mind, but he can talk to spirits very much like, what was the character's name last year that could do it?
I don't remember the character's name, but he was the opposite way. He was the skeptical one last year when it was happening to him.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah.
But now he's the one doing it, but he's winning. He's getting, the guy is buying into the whole thing. Kevin walks upstairs, and who do we see?
Now, before you get upstairs, When they first saw it, I thought that somehow because that guy was killed by him, that somehow because of the area and the place that they live in, that supernatural gift or whatever actually passed on to him. So I was like, oh man, this is kind of cool the way they're going with it. And then we cue to him being upstairs, and
there's the ex-wife.
Yes.
The character's name was Eddie, by the way. He was, or I'm sorry, Eddie from Family Matters, if you remember correctly. The character in the show's name was Isaac.
Oh, gotcha.
yeah, sorry.
Gotcha.
I was trying to throw the Family Matters reference in there, but it comes a little late.
So we get up the stairs, and there's Kevin's ex-wife, and she's got a headset on, and she's looking at a monitor. Well, the monitor is showing John and the guy downstairs, and she's feeding John the lines to tell the guy, letting us know that this whole thing's a scam, that they're all in on it, that those two are in on it at least. And then Kevin's in on it because he then comes in and watches, and they've obviously been doing this for a while, and now they're all in on scamming these people, and you know, it's full circle how they've come around, and now John comes around to scamming and whatnot.
But to what end? Because then we see them shredding the money. It's like, well, what are they doing it for?
Right, that confused me.
I don't get that.
Yeah, I didn't get that either. And does this mean that... I'm sorry, what was the character's name again?
Which one?
In the first and last season that did this.
Isaac.
Isaac. So does this mean Isaac ran a similar scam, or was his ability real? Or is that what they're referencing? Like,
That's a good question.
It seemed like he thought it was real, but I don't know.
It's a good question.
He never really knew for sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the only real thing we saw was when he went to the cabin in the woods with, wasn't it Isaac's dad or whatever, that made him die and did all that thing. But we never really got, for sure knew if Isaac's stuff was real. So I think it's just John carrying that on as a scam, but I don't know why if they're not keeping the money. So.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out. So then here's the next bomb drop. John then
Before you move on, I think the only reason that they might be doing it is because she likes helping people, and maybe she's finding this as her way to be a therapist without actually talking to people and getting into it, because she always got too emotional with it. It's kind of a way for her to do it.
Very true.
I don't know. Now that she's out of the remnant, she's kind of has no purpose on the show. So.
Well, did anyone else catch the way that Kevin looked at her during that whole interaction? Because now, her and the guy doing it now are together, right? They're married.
Yeah, that was.
Yep. That there's was your bombshell, Brian.
Yeah, there's the bomb that we're about to drop. Is then John leans over and they start making out. Like right in front of Kevin, and then he kind of gives a quizzical look. That blew my mind. When they started doing that, I was like, whoa, timeout. What just happened here?
Yep, and that's what I was saying about the way that they're kind of mixing the casts between the first and second season. I like what they're doing with it.
Yeah.
Because the second season, when it started, I was a little off on it. I was like, I don't really like the whole change of place and the change of whole cast, and you only kept a couple people from the first season, but now that we've got it all working together, I think it's much better. So the third season's definitely starting out on a good foot for me.
Yeah, and apparently everybody's cool about it.
Yeah.
Kevin seems totally at peace with everything that's going on, which is different, too, from what we've seen in the first two seasons from him. So.
Well, I don't know if at peace, considering later on what we see.
We'll get there.
All right, so that night we get to, it is Tommy's birthday. They have a big surprise birthday party for him. And this is when we learn that everybody's cool with everybody, because all the folks are there. John and Lori are married and they're there. And then Kevin and Nora are, they're not married, they're just together. But, there. And then Matt and Mary, they all come over and it seems like everyone's there. Then Kevin's daughter shows up. And I guess she's in college now, because they make references to her getting back to campus.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a nice little surprise that she could come home for her brother's birthday. So everybody, one big happy family, everybody was all excited. And then Kevin even tells a story of how he met Lori and how, Tommy came into their lives and they got married. And I think it didn't sit well with Matt the way he called it karma and kismet and divine. Did he said divine intervention? And I think that's the part that didn't sit well with Matt.
Yeah. Well, earlier in the episode, we kind of skipped over it, but Matt's little helper there, Michael, that's John's kid, isn't it? Is it not?
Yeah, it's also Denzel Washington's kid in Fences.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, you see Kevin walk in on him looking at the computer, and he makes a joke where, oh, were you looking at porn? Because he closed it real quick.
Yeah.
But if you notice on there, he was looking up stuff about Mapleton. So he was doing research on Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of your first hint as to what's going on with Matt and Michael, and they're kind of looking into what's up with Kevin. And then, like you said, here in this discussion where they're talking about divine intervention, and he's like, well, what do you mean by that, you know? So they're thinking something's up with Kevin, and they're kind of looking into him. You're getting those little hints as the episode goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was definitely an awkward moment for everybody there, and Kevin didn't really seem to just pick up on it. He kind of laughed it away, and then they all, cheered to the story, and then that was it. But it was definitely an awkward moment between all four of the characters here.
Yeah. Now, here's my question. I understand, you know, John has moved on and he's married to Lori now. But what happened to his wife from the last season, Regina King?
Great question. I have that question as well.
Now, didn't she go back across the bridge to get Evie, and she was caught in the blast?
Okay, but did we see definitively that she died or anything? Or, I mean, I don't remember that. So I'm just wondering if she's going to be back.
I remember her running through the gate going back towards Evie on the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the blast. So they don't definitively show her body, but I'm it's one of those things that, you know, with everything else, it could come, you know, back later in the show.
Yeah, I think we might see her again.
They put her in a box like the birds. Did she collect the birds?
There you go. She's just gonna
She'll come back to life like the dead birds that she used to put in the box.
I wish we'd see Holy Wayne come back. I liked Holy Wayne.
Yeah.
I miss Holy Wayne. But I think he's done.
Yeah. All right, so moving a little further along, the next day, is this when Kevin and Tom, are they riding in the car? In the cruiser?
No, even before that, you have the morning after the party is when you have Feeling Groovy playing.
Oh, right. And, there you go.
Kevin's getting ready for work.
It's the baptism, right?
No, Kevin's getting ready for work first. And, like all of us, you get ready for work by sitting on the edge of your bed
with duct tape
and a dry cleaning bag.
Yeah.
And you put it over your head until you asphyxiate yourself. So. And then the best part about that sequence is you're waiting to see, did the dude die? What's going on here? Like, you know, you see the bag sucked into his mouth, and then they cut to him just bounding out the front door off to work.
Yep.
Nothing happened.
All dressed, hair's fine, abs are ripped, the usual.
Yep. Which is a scene that you kind of hold on to, especially as we go, later on. But it's a scene that that stuck with me as they went forward, especially when we go into the next scene where he goes to the – he gets the call from – to go down to the river.
Yep, for the baptism. Some people had supposedly poisoned the water where the church was doing baptisms.
Mm-hmm.
So being the chief, he responds, and he obviously just doesn't care, has a death wish, as we just saw with the bag over the head. He jumps right into the water to see if it's okay or not. So.
But it was also the way he responded, because he started getting, it looked like a flashback of the remnant back in Mapleton, where you had the huge protest, and he was just like, he kind of just went away and just started, walking as if that's it. It doesn't matter. There's nothing else to care for.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, he jumps into the river thinking it's poisoned, or not even caring if it is or not. So,
right.
Yeah. I think he just knows he can't die in Miracle for whatever reason. We saw it at the end of the last season where he got shot and he survived. And he just has this wish now, and he keeps trying to push it and see what'll happen, I think,
So do you think he is cognizant of that? Because I know we'll talk about it later, but do you think he's cognizant of that fact that...
I think so. I think just, showing him trying to put the bag over his head is enough.
Is he kind of like a Bill Murray in Groundhog Day? He's just trying to test the limits on how exactly he can be killed?
Yeah, I think so.
It's possible.
Because then, and I think he's always kind of been a denier of religion or whatever, and against, he never bought or drank the Kool-Aid that Matt was trying to push,
Yeah.
And then you see this scene where he gets in the water and they try and take advantage of that. Like, hey, be baptized, like show everyone else it's safe. But then what does he say as he gets up? That didn't count.
Yeah, that didn't right. count.
You know, he's denying the baptism even. So.
Now, if we can, before we move forward, we need to back up a little bit. Before he did the little bag over his head thing, Nora was already awake and heading out for the day. And she said she'll be back in a little bit. She's just going for a quick bike ride. And then she, and then we just see her throw on a baseball cap and hop on her bicycle and then just ride away. The only reason I mentioned that is maybe we'll bring it up again later. Maybe.
Good thought. Good thought.
Interesting. Interesting. She does like to ride the bike.
Yep. So back to present time. Now he's driving with his son in the car and he's, you know, soaking wet, but the, and his son's driving. But then now they start getting shot at.
Yep, by a rifle, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, which the first two bullets definitely go driver's side, and the car, you know, crashes quickly. My initial reaction is Tommy was done, is that he hit the sun. Kevin gets,
that's,
you know,
what I
yeah,
yep. I thought the same thing.
He jumps out the car, pulls his gun, has a clean line of sight, and is about to put Dean down because that is who is shooting him with his old dog hunting rifle, and for some reason his gun goes click. He has no bullets inside of the gun. I don't, that part didn't hold true to me. I'm curious why that happened. I don't know if you guys picked up on anything that I missed.
Yeah, I don't know. Is there an issue with being in the water, maybe, that had something to do with that? I don't know.
Yeah, because it looked like he tried to cycle around through, and he ended up giving up on it.
Yeah. So with that, though, then Dean just walks right up on him, and he's got the gun pointed. And he says right to his face, "You've changed, right?" And he's,
yeah.
And
you're different.
Yeah. And so just before he pulls the trigger and puts out Kevin, Tommy did not die, and Tommy blows Dean's head off. Blood splatters quite everywhere. It's going to be a lot to clean up. And now Tommy killed Dean.
Yeah. And you do hear Kevin yell for Tommy just before all that too.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe the no bullets in the gun is another step of his death wish. Maybe he's out there working every day with no bullets.
Yeah, that's I was trying to dig deeper on that one. That might be a possibility as well. Mm-hmm. That maybe he purposefully does that. But I mean, I don't know, the way he pulled his gun and was ready to shoot and then almost kind of forgot that he didn't have any in there. You know, like there's that side of him that still is human, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess muscle memory from years being a police officer.
True.
You know, just does it.
True. Before that, I went too far. Before that, Tommy makes reference to the people that poisoned the water hole. Mm-hmm. That
poisoned the water hole.
Thank you for picking up. that he said they were right. The people that did the poisoning, he was like, you know, they were right, you know, about the little conspiracy of the drone strike that blew up the GR. And Kevin turns and very matter-of-factly says to him, there was a leaky gas line, and one of the GR lit a cigarette, and it blew up. End of story.
That's the story.
So I paraphrase. And so that's the story. So, and then they kind of both look each other in the eye and kind of pause for a minute, and Kevin is giving his son that, like, this is what you're going with, buddy. And, like, that's, you know, there's no more to it, you know, type thing. So, little conspiracy theory going on there between them and then the outsiders, if you will.
Yeah, that's why I think you're going to still see more guilty remnant, or at least those kind of protesters. They're going to be a presence throughout the season, for sure.
He also asked Kevin how he knew the water wasn't poison.
I think the shots interrupted that, right?
Yeah, because, well, he turned matter-of-factly and said, I just knew. And then the shot rang out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Death wish, son of a bitch.
He's trying everything, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. So, and then after that, what do we cut to where Nora went off to, right? Nora went to talk to Mary. And,
right.
Mary has decided that she's returning to Mapleton with Noah and leaving Matt.
Yep.
And, you know, we bring
it up. As she puts forever.
Yeah, well, we bring it up again, you know, from last season where he wouldn't let her leave the city limits because he thought being there cured her and made her able to have a baby and all that. So I'm kind of intrigued to see what happens when she leaves, honestly.
Yeah, I hope it's like Field of Dreams.
Same thing. Yep.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I was hoping it's like Field of Dreams. Like, as soon as she steps over the rocks, then she just goes back into the coma or turns into a doctor, something to that effect.
I just wonder if she's flying United or not, because she might not get there.
So she's working on her right cross. It'll also be interesting to see what happens to Noah, considering how he came into the world and, you know, him being a part of, you know, Miracle. Mm-hmm. What would happen to him during that that flight, if you will?
Yeah.
Do you guys think he hooked up with her while she was in the coma?
Oh yeah, seems like it.
I think
I got that vibe.
It creeps me out. Matt creeps me out, man, because I just always remember that actor. He was the bad guy in Gone in 60 Seconds, but he has not aged well. He looks like a totally different dude.
He's a doctor.
There was definitely, last season, there were definitely some moments where you did get a creep factor during that whole time.
Yeah.
And I don't blame anybody for not believing him when he told people that she was awake and, you know, she came out of the coma and that's how they had their baby.
Yeah. So, but anyways, that's also the scene where Mary drops the bomb to Matt to Kevin that Matt's writing the book about him.
Right.
And basically calling it a gospel. You know, what did she say? He got bored with the Bible or thought the New Testament was getting old?
Exactly.
Yes.
That's what it was, yeah. So he's working on a new book about Kevin and all his multiple deaths and being able to come back to life. So Kevin's hot about that and tries to go confront him, and Michael's there as well again, and then we find out that John also is involved and believes in Kevin, and he, you know, he says the same thing. I shot you last season and you came back, you know, point blank in the chest, and you walked away and didn't go to the hospital till the next day.
Did you get that? So, I kind of got that John. I didn't know that he was like involved, but then when he walked in and they told him, I think he just bought it.
Yeah,
that's how I took it.
I don't know if he was involved, but maybe just hearing from his son. His son has maybe sold it to him. Yeah. You know?
I just think, like, when he heard it just made sense. Like, he was like, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's how I took it, that John was like, well, yeah, I shot you last year, point blank, and you didn't even go to the hospital until the next day.
Right.
Yeah, it makes sense that you can't die or that you've got some kind of supernatural ability going on here.
And then Matt explains you tried to drown yourself and you made it, and then what's John's son's name? I can't remember his darn son's name.
Michael.
And then he talks about how he poisoned himself, and yet the dude can't die. And then that's kind of what spurred their thoughts to start writing the book of Kevin.
And Kevin was also a little upset that Michael had told him, because he was like, wait, you told him that? And he's like, it seemed important.
Yeah. Well, in another song reference, this is my thing, they were playing a song, I don't know if you caught the lyrics, I See the Sign. It was an Ace of Base. It was very similar, very similar lyrics to that, and you know, they're definitely laying it on and kind of giving you those hints. You know, pay attention to what we're talking about here. This is important. So
now we get good. So he forces them to turn over the book. Matt then says, "I trust you," and hands over this beautifully leather-bound, handwritten book. They say it's the only copy, and he trusts Kevin to then, you know, go read it essentially and not do anything. Kevin walks right outside, walks right over to a barbecue that happens to be flaming right near the courtyard, and is all set to throw the book in there, but then hesitates, doesn't do it, and then in the end decides not to burn the book. He looks up, and what catches his eye is two airplanes doing the skywriting saying 13 days to go, and that's kind of what catches his eye and then stops him from writing the book. From the clouds of the airplane, a bunch of doves form, and then we follow the doves as they then land in some lady's kind of yard, and it's a older woman. We don't see her face or anything, but you can tell it's kind of an older woman, jeans and kind of farming type outfit, and she's gathering these doves. There have to be two dozen doves, maybe.
Easily. I mean, she had, what, six cages there or something like that?
Yeah, and she's just politely and gently just loading up the doves into these cages and then loading them onto her bicycle.
Well, they were carrier pigeons too, weren't they? Because didn't they show a scene where she pulls something off of one of their legs?
Yep, and then she immediately throws it into a bin with a whole bunch of other ones, and she doesn't even bother to open it or read it. Very reminiscent of the opening scenes where the gentleman would pull off the carrier pigeons and read what day the world was going to end, and everybody bought into it. But here, this lady didn't buy into it. She immediately threw it away. she rides her bike with the doves on the back and goes down an old farm dirt road. Did you guys recognize the location? Because to me, I didn't, you know, it was just green farmland. They panned out to show a large portion of the area, but I didn't pick up on if that was significant.
The one thing I read online said that you're supposed to, I didn't catch it, but you're supposed to pick up on that it's Australia. If you remember earlier in the episode, Matt made mention to his father, who is now living in Australia.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if we're going to see that come back around at some point this season.
How were we supposed to know that was Australia?
I didn't see kangaroos or koalas.
No, I don't know. I didn't catch it either.
It was very green. I guess I don't picture green when I think Australia, but I've never been. Okay. So then she shows up, I guess, at a convent because there's a nun out front gardening. And the nun looks up at her and says, I thought you forgot, or I thought you were going to forget. But the person on the bike hops off, doesn't really say anything, unloads the doves, puts them to the side. The nun makes reference to how many of them there are. And then who wants to drop the bomb?
Well, she says, Sarah, does the name Kevin mean anything to you?
Mm-hmm.
And then we see Sarah's face. And to me, and I think you too, Brian, we haven't talked to Roy about it, but that looked to me like an older Nora.
Yes.
That was an older Nora. Yeah. It was a spitting image of an older Nora.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It was Nora. She just had some long gray hair, and she was older. And
I mean, we referenced the bike earlier. Here she is riding the bike again.
Yeah. On a bike with a baseball cap, just the same way that Nora left us earlier in the episode. Very eerily. And she just kind of stares, like, off into the distance, so you can get a good, solid look at her face so that you know that that's something related to Nora in some way. And then end scene.
Yes. Now, a little bit of a spoiler alert for you. I did look up a couple things while we were talking. I don't know if you want them or not. These are just titles of the episodes. We do have an episode, I think it's episode 3 or 4, that says something about G'day, mate, in the title. Okay. So that may be, like I said, the Australia thing.
Well,
then, before you can move on, why wouldn't they were in Australia, wouldn't of the person living there, the nun or whatever, have at least an accent to give the audience something?
Maybe they lost that. Maybe they were trying to give us more of a reference, but I didn't really catch it.
I'll have to go back and see the end of that and see if I can't catch anything, because that was one that just totally escaped me.
Mm-hmm. And in the after the episode, it gave, you know, this season on Leftovers type preview. It definitely showed the dad in Australia.
Okay, well, there you go. And like I said, he referenced that earlier in the season, or in the episode. So.
Right.
And then also the season finale episode is titled The Book of Nora.
Ooh.
So we're getting kind of a bookend, if you will, of the seasons with Kevin and Nora. So maybe that's where all this will tie back in, is the last episode. Makes sense, right?
Sure.
Yeah, and to be honest, she was kind of one of the central characters, at least in the first season, being one of those rare people that lost her entire family during the Departed. So it's interesting that they're going to continue to, you know, kind of make it a full circle and see where that comes.
Her family was watching the Departed.
What's that?
That would be kind of creepy if you were watching the Departed when that happened.
Yeah.
That would be creepy.
This is interesting. I'm pumped for the season. I thought that was one of the better episodes they've had, even though it just threw you off like, whoa.
Yeah,
you know.
And we've talked about this before. I think it's smart when shows know their end game. Oh, this is our last season. We know what we're doing. Let's finish it right, you know, and they've got their plan made out. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. Like you said, probably the best episode I've seen. You know, I'm definitely looking forward to where we're going this season. So.
Yeah, and this season almost didn't happen. You know, there was a minute there where they weren't even sure, and we were wondering if season 2 was just going to end it and not give us any answers. And then we were lucky when they said, okay, and they made a good decision. They said, next season, we're definitely booking, and it's going to be it. That's it. That's all we got. So then at least we knew at the end of last season going into it, this was going to wrap. I remember seeing an article with Lindelof and Variety, I believe, where they asked him about having 8 episodes, if he wanted more or less, and why he got 8 episodes, and he said, well, that's all HBO would give us. So, if he wanted more, I guess they would have given, but And I'm pumped because I guess they knew from the get-go. You know, it's not like this dragged out thing where they weren't sure. Okay, let's wrap it. Like, they've known since before they wrote a script for season three that this is what's going to end. We only get this many episodes. Let's do it right and let's action pack it.
Yeah, and it's tough when you're working on source material that you only did the first season from, and then you've had to go original from there. I think they've done a great job doing that, you know.
I agree. I'm really hoping that you know, they really keep up with the each episode having, you know, some kind of a surprise, some kind of, you know, oh man, I can't believe, you know, a bomb that comes off to us. And really just keep it going all season long, so that when that finale comes, it's one of those things where, like, man, I really wish they would have gotten another episode, you know, another season out of this, or, you know, a 10-episode season, so we get even two more. So,
yeah, let's hope they end it well, where it's one of these great shows like HBO is known to do, you know, and you'll be able to look back on it, and hopefully it has a good ending. You know, I know some people didn't like the Lost ending, so it worries me with Lindelof in charge what we're going to get, if we're not really going to get closure. But I hope we do, and I'm excited for the next 7 weeks.
All right, prediction time before we go forward. I got five questions. They're essentially yes or no's from you guys, but we can expand after we ask. You ready?
Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Is Kevin Jesus?
No.
No.
Okay. Is Nora God?
No.
No.
Will we see the Guilty Remnants again?
Yes.
Most definitely.
Will we get answers towards all of this?
No.
Probably not.
And will the world end in 13 days?
I don't think so.
I don't think a complete extinction level event, but I think we may see something. Something big, similar to The Departure. Or, like we talked about before, maybe we could even see it in reverse. Maybe those people will just show back up.
Mm-hmm. They were just
maybe this is all just a backdoor pilot to the 4400 on USA.
Could it be that it just happens in Miracle, that since the last time it was left people, alone, and then all of Miracle just disappears?
That's a valid prediction. Yep. My answers are the same. No and no for if he's Jesus, if, you know. Maybe they could go where Kevin is some type of a prophet type route or something to that effect. I don't think they'll give us an answer at all towards how or why this happened and why the departure. I don't think they will. I don't think that's what this show is about. Yeah, I remember, you know, season one, everyone said that, like, how are we going to find out? Are we going to find out? I think we've all realized that's not what this is about, and they're not going to give us that answer. I think something will happen in 13 days. I think the world, something will happen.
I think if you get an answer, that's going to be one of the surprises. If they even bother with it at all, that will be a bombshell in and of itself. Because I don't think anyone's expecting to get an answer.
Well, they'll leave some of it alone. Like, you're not going to know anything about the dogs, whether anything was, you know, valid on that angle, or if that guy was just crazy. You know, there will be certain things they definitely leave open and never give you an answer to. But I hope we get some sort of closure, especially for our main characters.
Agreed. Like, how did Nora break her arm? We forgot to mention that. She had a broken arm, and she had a cast.
Yeah. And you got to think, if it's something like that where they make a point, it's got to be important somehow.
Right.
Yeah, and she was very itchy through the episode. Did you notice that? She couldn't quite reach that itch on her back.
Yeah, and then she was trying to scratch inside her cast, which anyone that's broken their arm, that happens. It's annoying.
It stays moist.
All right, I think that's going to wrap us up for...
Yeah, wrap up on moist, all right.
Yep, why not? So we will do our absolute best to be here each and every week for each and every of the 8 episodes of the final season of Leftovers. For Roy and Tony, I am Brian with Take Two Podcast, and this was episode 1 of the final season, season 3 of the Leftovers Special Edition Show.
And hey, guys, please let us know if you have any other theories, comments... Anything you think about the show, if you're a big fan like we are, let us know what your thoughts were on the season premiere and where we're going with this season. You can email us at take2podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Facebook, Take Two Podcast, or on Twitter @Take Two Podcast. We love the interaction, so please respond. Let us get the conversation going with you. Thanks for listening, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night.